Okay.
Hello, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic we Boomer women want to know about, getting our financial houses in order when it comes to helping our kids financially. Tonight, our goal is to discuss a rather complicated subject. Should parents stop helping our adult kids financially, and if so, when and under what situations? My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, a Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor and NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate, to start our discussion, which asks, how long should you help your adult children with their finances? Those of you who listen to us often know that Pamela J. Sams is a frequent guest and always covers important information related to money and financial planning, something too many of us Boomer women just feel that we don't know enough about. Pam is an expert in personal finance. She's spent more than a dozen years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. More importantly, Pam is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. There, she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. A graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia, Pam holds an MBA in financial management from Averett University. She's earned several client service and financial planning awards and successfully earned her CRPC, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor, certification through the College of Financial Planning. Pam, tonight's topic, how to stop serving as the bank of mom and dad, is something many of us will need to address, and most likely few of us already know that this is not just a financial problem, there's a big emotional element as well. I was just reading an article, Pam, that says that according to a study completed a few years ago by the National Endowment for Financial Education, more than half the parents surveyed, actually it was 59%, financially helped their adult children who were out of college. Money was most often given for living costs, transportation, and even spending money. Actually, from what I've read, it looks like 50% of the surveyed parents are providing a place to live, 48% are helping with living expenses, then there's 35% helping with health insurance, and we all know quite often when you first, even if you're a young kid starting out, you don't have health insurance, and now the laws have changed and we can, you know, keep a kid on our policies until they're 26, but that means we're still paying the premium for it most likely. Then again, there's 29% of us that are providing spending money, 19% providing emergency money, which is, you know, I think a thing that kids think the bank of mom and dad is a great place to go for the emergency situations. And 10% are helping to pay down credit card debt. So when parents are asked to help, most replied that they were legitimately concerned about their child's financial well-being, but others stated that they did not want their children to struggle financially like they once did. On the other hand, my dad, who's a real stickler for stand on your own two feet, he always said that, you know, struggle is good for you. It builds character. So I don't know if people of our age think that, but, you know, he's in his 70s. He's in his 80s, so he's a different generation. But based on these thoughts, it's clear that it's not necessarily a situation where our kids are the ones coming to us with their hands out. Sometimes it's parents who get the financial ball rolling. For example, I thought about you in Herndon just yesterday, Pam, because I was watching a segment of HGTV's House Hunters, and they had a D.C.-based young couple that was searching for a $350,000 home because her father was buying it for them, and they both had jobs. So I was kind of intrigued as, was he just giving them the down payment, or was he actually putting $350,000? They didn't really make that clear. But beside that, let's get to the big question. Let's start with, what's the difference between helping our children and enabling them?
Great question. First off, thank you for having me once again, and happy spring to everybody who is out there, if you are having spring-like weather in your region. But just like you explained before, Ann, you know, nearly 60% of parents are providing some type of financial support to their adult children in that survey that you had mentioned before. and the spending is really 13% more are going to resources for their grown offspring. So this, I think that survey was done a few years back. It has actually increased by 13% more from that survey was initially. So really many parents are facing some financial strains. That means that a lot of boomers are postponing retirement, maybe taking some savings out or raiding their savings, and even taking on additional debt in an effort to help out their children. And it really kind of weighs heavy, and it means a lot of added worries to boomer parents. As you mentioned before with your dad, you know, more than likely grew up during the Depression era. Baby boomer parents tend to be a lot more freer with money and then, you know, our own parents were, who grew up in the Depression. Basically, you know, your father probably said the same thing, you know, struggle, it builds character, you know, every nickel saved is a nickel earned, whatever, to really get you on your feet a lot better. And I think baby boomer parents tend to be a little more loosey-goosey and a lot freer with money. And besides that, boomers are probably caught between in a sandwich generation. Several probably phone calls ago, we had talked about taking care of aging parents. And then we also have to take care of boomerang children who come back after college or never left the nest, so to speak. So we're kind of squeezed in terms of what resources we have available to our children. Just to kind of recap some of what you talked about in the survey, a few years back, USA Today also conducted a survey where they polled 500 parents of recent college graduates, and basically they had expressed how long, or at least asked them, how long did they expect to provide some financial support to their children. 56% said up to a year, 31% said 2 to 4, and 13% actually said more than 5 years. So that's still a fairly high number to saying, I'm going to help out my adult children over 5 years. So that brings us really to the topic of enabling or helping versus enabling. So getting adult children to be responsible for themselves in areas of life really often hinders well-meaning parents who want to help children become independent or really get back on their feet if they've had some adverse financial situation. But instead, coming to realize later that that help could have provided never seems to end. So if you're helping and you keep helping, that turns into more of enabling. And enabling occurs when children, you know, either if you're not living with the parents, adult children who have working spouses, full-time jobs, still continuing to make phone calls to parents asking for money for, I need to pay my light bill, or I need to pay my car insurance, or I need these sort of things. And then really these urgent situations on, I need this money fast. And that becomes a more enabling situation. If you have children who have a spouse and they are working and have full-time jobs, which that kind of brings me to the point where you had mentioned before, that couple that was buying a new home, and if their parents were paying for it, it seems as though, you know, that could have been a situation where either he was maybe giving it as a gift, or maybe at that point he's enabling them to continue using resources from the bank of mom and dad, versus kind of going out on their own and being responsible for buying their own house and doing a down payment and things like that. So it's a real need for motivation to make a change from I want to help out versus now all of a sudden it's never ending and you're enabling the situation every time your child calls you on the phone and say, I need help because, you know, my lights are going to be turned off tomorrow, or I don't have any groceries or food in my house. So if there's definitely a need there, you want to help out a little. But if there are actual adult children and working spouses and there's full-time jobs, that becomes an enabling situation.
All right. So that's a good way to make it clear what's the difference there. Excellent. And I, in the research that I was doing, and you probably ran into this too, I actually discovered that there are some parents that like to provide for their adult children because it makes them feel better about themselves, and from a health point of view, that actually seemed to make them healthier, which I found very convoluted. I wasn't quite sure what to make of that.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of one of the things of really kind of being aware of the motives on why parents are still assisting adult children. So you really need to consider that what your own participation would be in terms of adults, child's money dependent. So some people have this, I guess, situation where subconsciously they may be using money as a way to connect to their child, especially if there's an empty nest situation, or a desire sometimes subconsciously to be or remain in control of children. So there may be some underlying motives there when parents are giving additional resources or money, where they have adult children still being money dependent. Based on some of those things. So there may be some psychological issues going on. So you have to be aware of what your underlying motives are when you are helping your children financially and get on their feet, or, you know, make sure there's not some connection there where you're trying to still remain in control of their money, or remain in control of money, and you still see them as a young child, and you want to do more of a controlling situation. You don't want to be in that situation when you're dealing with your adult children and money dependencies, because then that will, in turn, move over to what we had discussed before, continue to enable them. And they're never going to get on their feet if you continue to do enable the situation. And then, you know, that will run eventually on your resources. So it's probably not a good thing to continue to subsidize your adult children's financial situation. You want to make sure there's some disconnect there where you're not having it as a mean of control.
All right. Well, all right. Given that understanding, how can we go about closing the bank of mom and dad, as we've been calling it?
Yeah, I mean, the bank of mom and dad, you know, as the cost of living is soaring, you know, more young adults are, like I said, mentioned before, kind of a boomerang effect, returning back to parents for financial help. And, you know, to be honest, sometimes the best help in the world is just to say no. The bank is closed, no. And then setting boundaries. So you want to make sure you are setting boundaries with your adult children if you end up saying no to a situation. Now, if they're in dire need and dire distress, of course you help them there. But if it's one of those enabling type situations where you know they have the resources, but instead of, you know, I guess I always call it people, you know, spending other people's money or spending mom's dad's money, then you need to, you know, really, you know, I guess I always call it tough love. You really just have to say no, and the bank is closed, and then help them become financially independent human beings and setting those boundaries. So it's tough at first. You know, you have to show a little tough love, but the best way is to just say no, that I'm not going to continue to enable, I'm not going to continue to subsidize your lifestyle, because that's what happens sometimes with children who keep coming back to mom and dad, even though they have full-time jobs. They have grown into a lifestyle that they are accustomed to, and when they don't have those needs, or at least the resources to fund those needs, it's easy to just go back to mom and dad and say, hey, can you give me, you know, X amount of dollars to buy this or to pay this. Or maybe they have spent extra resources on extravagant things versus paying their light bill or things like that, where they know they can come back to the bank of mom and dad and say, in an emergency situation, if my lights are going to be turned off tomorrow, they'll give me some money. So you don't want to be in a situation where you're subsidizing a lifestyle for your children.
Good point. All right. So are there some ways that you would recommend to go about setting those boundaries that you've been talking about?
Yeah, really, you know, there are some basic steps in order to help children become financially independent when you're setting those boundaries. So you always want to, you know, basically talk about numbers. So if you are helping adult children, you need to discuss kind of the figures from the beginning. So if they need help with their rent, or they need help on, you know, paying certain expenses, both parties need to be on board with really discussing how much help and then for how long. So that's basically setting those boundaries, just like, you know, just kind of general rules of the game that you need to engage in with your children. So from the beginning, you need to discuss how much to discuss the figures and the numbers. So if they need X amount of dollars for rent, how much are they going to need, and then for how long are you going to be paying that? Now, to set up a young adult for independence from the start, parents need really to be wise and sit down with them to review the cost of living independently of kind of the housing and utilities and transportation. That's what I talked about before about lifestyle or subsidizing your children's lifestyle. So going through the cost of living independent of some of the extra things like entertainment and, movie expenses and all of those sort of things. So get the bare basic of cost of living expenses, and then helping them kind of see the big picture will help them overall make it influence what lifestyle they're living, and if they're in the position where they're accepting their first job or making job changes, that will also determine what type of job decisions they need to be making in order to accommodate their cost of living outside of, kind of the other lifestyle issues. So if you're going to, transition or help your kids become financially independent, you need to set the boundaries first, talking the numbers from the beginning, how much are you going to need, how long are you going to need it for, and then you'll come up with a conclusion on, or basically some guidelines that you can work with.
Okay.
Okay. Now, one of the other areas as well is that you want to create a timeline. So the first thing parents really need to do is clarify whether it's going to be a support situation temporarily or is it going to be ongoing. So if it's a one-time situation where your lights got turned off or you need it for that versus am I going to be paying your electric bill every month? So you need to clarify kind of the timeline. Now, if neither understands the expectations or really time limits, really misunderstandings happen, and that creates tension. So if the child came to you and said, I need money for my light bill to pay it, they're going to cut it off, and then next month the same thing happens and the next thing it happens, then that means that's an ongoing situation. And not being clear with expectations up front and that time limit really creates a tension in the family, so you don't want that. Also, a deadline will help kind of motivate your adult child as well to secure the income they need to live independently. So if you say, this is where I'm going to pay your electric bill for, let's say, the next 3 months. After that, you really need to kind of figure out your situation in order to pay it independently on your own from now on. So kind of, everybody kind of works on a deadline. When somebody says, okay, a deadline's at, 2 weeks, people tend to find a way to get it done. So it encourages and motivates them to make sure they have that income in order to live independently once those resources of Bank of Mom and Dad go away. So creating that timeline.
All right. You're saying that, I have a question. And do schools these days teach budgeting to kids, or is that something that parents need to be training their kids on because it's not something that they learn in school?
Yeah, it's always been quite a debate. At first, they have not been recently, at least in my area, in the Northern Virginia area, they've actually added a curriculum where they teach economics to the children. I believe it's either junior or senior year in high school that they learn some of these basic money management skills. Because, where else are you really kind of going to learn it besides, your parents? And sometimes, I know we've had several conversations really about parents not really being comfortable talking about money to children sometimes, or where they are with finances. So it becomes an uncomfortable situation with them. So no one really gets taught the correct way to handle money, make sure you're not going into debt. So, putting it into the schools, at least as part of the curriculum, is really the best case scenario. I'm not sure if it's going on a nationwide platform. I know a lot of financial education organizations have really been proponents of financial literacy in the schools and getting it back into the schools. So I know it's an overall initiative that a lot of people want to make sure, because this is an important piece of life that people need to learn early to make sure they won't get in trouble for the long term. So, yeah, that's a very good question.
All right. Well, I interrupted you I think that you were going to talk about step three of
Yeah.
steps to help our adult children.
Exactly. Now, one of the other steps that you may want to consider is clarifying gifts versus loans. Now, I know that sounds like a crazy situation because most of the time when you loan kids money, you know you're not going to give it back. You're not going to get it back. I mean, mm-hmm. when you give money to your kids, more than likely you know you're not going to get it back. But you definitely want to make sure you do clarify it. So if you're launching an independent life, such as your child, there's going to be some startup costs that are associated with it, and then bills. So many adults, what happens is that they need some help, but it's really important as parents define whether the support is going to be either in a gift or if they're, you know, if there are strings attached to that gift, and if it's a loan, basically what the terms are on the loan, just like if you went to a bank or if you went somewhere, really getting something in writing. It's where you say, if this is a loan, I need to be paid back, and this is the amount of money that you need to pay me back on a monthly basis, just like you would do your car loan or other loans mm-hmm. that you have. You may be a little more loose with the terms, but you do want to have something in writing if you are expecting it to be a loan versus a gift. One of the surveys that I did look at as well is that usually only about 27% of young adults really receive parental support, plan to pay it back. So that's a really okay. small portion. So most people are expecting it to be a gift, and then that's it, and not pay it back. Mm-hmm. So really you need to discuss, or at least the parent needs to discuss, launch the discussion to make sure you set those parameters, if it's going to be a gift or if it's going to be a loan. If it's going to be a loan, devising terms, just like you would do with any other loan that you take out or from a bank or some other resource, so you know the terms that you can pay it back. You're going to pay me $100 a month for the next whatever period, and then just kind of get it in writing and have both of you sign it so you know and clarify that. If it's a gift, you know you're not going to get it back. You're just basically giving money to your children to support mm-hmm. them, but you do have to make sure, you know, when you're setting, you know, back to setting those boundaries, that you clarify if it's going to be a gift versus a loan.
All right. Now, if it's a loan and you've set up this agreement like you're talking about, what's your thoughts mm-hmm. on whether or not you charge interest? I mean, if they went to a bank, they'd have to pay interest.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of parents are, you know, sticklers, and they want to make sure they teach their kids right when it comes to loans. So I have seen some agreements where some of my clients have loaned their children money and they have charged interest on it. So that's one way. A lot of parents, you know, don't want to get into all of the formalities of it. You know, if they loan you $1,000, they'll put $100 a month for, you know, X amount until it's paid off. So it's mm-hmm. it really kind of depends. You know, it's a teaching lesson if you want to do it that way. Like you said, if you would go walk into any credit union or bank, you would end up paying interest, and this is how that works. You would do the same way as a teaching lesson for them. If you really just want to loan them the money, but you just want to get your original $1,000 back, if or whatever you loaned your child, then you just get it back in a certain period of time without charging the interest.
Okay. All right. So I guess what you're talking about is setting up expectations then.
Yeah. Really, you know, talking about the expectations. So that's kind of one of the steps to achieving or helping your child achieve financial independence is really expectations. So we had talked about the survey before, about 40% of non-student young adults living back at home, either now or in the recent past, three-quarters of them contribute to households, you know, either with groceries or utility payments, car costs, or help. So if you do have adult children that end up living back home, you may want to set some ground rules on, you're living in my house, I'll buy groceries, and then, you know, you would, you know, eat from those or whatever. If you want to, you can contribute to that grocery bill or the cost of the utilities and something, or at least to help out maybe with some mortgage. A lot of times people don't go that far, but some of the kind of the basic expenses that the child and your adult children want to contribute to. But you want to make sure that you set the ground rules on that. Now, if the adult child does have some concerns, everything has to be kind of put in writing. So you need to come to an agreement before they move back home, put it in writing that you're going to pay, you know, this percentage on the grocery bill, this percentage on utilities, however you decide what type of contributions to the household the adult child is going to be making, and make those arrangements before you move in, because you have to discuss mm-hmm. those expectations, because once it's in, everything goes awry, and you have to go back to the drawing board. So trying to set expectations up front, and then really helping your adult children understand that they are expected to contribute to it. You know, so even if they couldn't afford to live outside of the home, but they still have a car or whatever, or they move back home and they're saving money for a down payment on a house, and so this mm-hmm. may be a way for them to speed up that process. You should expect them to contribute while they're there, in terms of resources that are allocated towards the household, and then really detailing how you want that to happen. Showing the view that they're an adult rather than a child. You know, this is not the mm-hmm. situation where you were living in my house before, you know, prior to 18, where I was responsible right. for you and I got to do this. Now you're an adult. You're not a child anymore, and you really need to expect some type of contribution to the household. And that will help them really become, or at least become financially secure adult, if you explain mm-hmm. to them kind of the expectations and the rules of contributing. Because if they were living outside of your home, they would have to pay utilities. They would have to pay all of these other things. So you should expect the same if they're in a financial situation to help contribute to the household.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea. I totally support that. And I've known some of my nieces and nephews have done what you were just talking about, lived at home while they were saving up the money to mm-hmm. Get their down payment together, and I don't know what the arrangements were that the various parents made, but I know I've known of adult children that had that kind of arrangement with their parents. So I think it's really important what you're saying, that they don't just move in and become kids again, in terms of that the parents are providing everything for them.
Yeah.
All right,
and it's
so
speak.
Go ahead.
But it's a really, familiar situation that it could happen, that when they move back to mom and dad, that all of a sudden now it's in a kid situation, but I'm a child again mm-hmm. and I'm living in your home. You are still an adult, and you need to have those resources allocated as such, behave like an adult. One of the other areas that I wanted to focus in on is really protecting your own financial health. A lot of
mm-hmm.
times
that was
gonna
be
people,
my next question.
Taking on debt, additional mm-hmm. debt to help children, which is, unless it's absolutely necessary for their well-being, it's really a big mistake to take on additional debt to help children, because it's not good for your own financial health. Back to that survey that we mentioned before, it said 26% of parents have taken on debt as a result of supporting their own adult children. So
wow,
really risky business.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people are taking on additional debts to do that. So really parents should have a serious talk with their adult children about, again, expectations and what to do that's best for both of their financial futures. You don't want to compromise your own financial future in order to support your adult children. Back to what I talked about earlier in our conversation, is that boomers, we tend to be a lot freer with money than our generation. So sometimes we end up postponing our own future retirement or whatever the case may be in order to support our adult children. So you want to make sure at all costs that you protect your own financial health at all costs. And, and not getting or taking on these additional debts in order to support adult children.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so important. I've known too many people that dipped into their own retirement funds thinking that this is just going to be a temporary thing I'm helping. And like you said, the kids don't tend to think of it as something that they have to pay mm-hmm. back. And then suddenly the good-hearted mom that dipped into a retirement fund to help out, suddenly, 10 years down the road or something, she realizes that, this money is never going to come back to me, and plus all the interest that she could have made if she'd kept it in some kind of investment.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, taking from retirement resources is, you know, really the worst thing to do when you start, you know, trying to help kids, especially when we talked about it possibly, or at least thinking it was going to be a temporary situation, and then it becomes an ongoing situation. And then, you know, basically you've put the building block up, enabling that adult child at the expense of your own retirement. So you don't want to do that. And it's really important, you know, where we talked about parents, that mom and dad are on board. You don't want to have parents slipping money to adult children without the other one's knowledge. So if you're a couple, you want to make sure everybody's on board and everybody knows what's going on, especially, you know, even with, you know, married parents, even divorced parents who are on the same page may be enabling child to manipulate, you know, either parent. And then prolong that financial dependence on your parents. So making sure, you know, both mom and dad on board. Now, as women, we tend to be softies with our children. So that's usually the first place that children come is, mom, I need money. And we are soft-hearted people, so we tend to maybe, you know, slip them something and don't tell dad that you did it. So that's not a good thing because, you know, a survey says about one-third of people in a committed relationship have admitted that they've lied to their spouse about money. It's called, I call it financial infidelity sometimes, because you're lying. You're keeping these financial secrets from your spouse. And that deception is really not good for the relationship or for the child, because, you know, they end up manipulating or paying, you know, just like when children were younger, you know, mom said no, but dad said yeah. It's the same situation. So you don't want that manipulation going on and that deceit, financial deceit going on behind in the background, because it's not good for either the parents or the adult child. So it's really important that if there's going to be support of an adult child, that both mom and dad are on board. They know all of the terms. They know all of the expectations. Because, you know, if you set up those rules that we had talked about before, you need to pay for groceries, or you need to put X percentage on groceries. And then mom said this is the way it's supposed to be, and dad said don't worry about it. You know, I'll cover it this time or whatever. Everyone has to have a united front when it comes to supporting adult children. Unless, you know, really things could go awry if everybody's not on the same page.
All right. So are you actually suggesting that, you know, there should be like a family meeting that everybody sits in and, you know, everybody is there for understanding exactly what the agreement is and there's checkpoints and that sort of thing?
Yeah. You really need to, you know, as with anything when you're dealing with finances, it's probably best to have a formal meeting where you sit down and discuss, schedule a review, and then do a check-in. So after you've really kind of set the timeline and you've defined the expectations, you need to have that continued conversation on the ongoing so that everybody really kind of understands the progress towards that particular goal that you're working towards. So if the timeline says within a year, you know, this is how much resources we're going to get, you may want to check in and say, you know, have you found a job? If you haven't found a job, what are some of the roadblocks that you've encountered? If they have a job, do they believe that, you know, there's a schedule for them to move out by a certain date and then you're previously agreed upon? So if they found a job within that year, can we modify the expectations and you're going to move out a little bit sooner? So really doing these reviews and check in as you're going along helps the adult child feel that they're supported, while you're also reinforcing your perception of them as adult children, really will help solidify the financial foundation. So having that formal meeting, going through the timeline, going through the expectations, and then checking in, you know, if you found a job, how much are you making? Are you able to, you know, sustain yourself financially? Can, you know, we expect you to, you know, move out a certain day? Are you on track? It's just like if you were doing your, you know, we always talk about, you know, overall for retirement plan and financial plan. It's the same thing. You're going to need to do a review and a check-in, make sure things are going on track. And if they're not, What type of things have you encountered? Are there things to get you back on track? And having that support of the parents to the adult child also makes them feel, you know, motivated to do better, reinforcing mm-hmm. that you're encouraging them to be as financially independent as possible. So regular reviews and check-in.
All right. What's next?
If you can't kind of get on board with your adult children, you may want to recruit a mediator such as a financial advisor.
Ah.
As we all know, parents, you know, with children, parents always are the ones that parents, you know, parents don't know what they're doing. You know, parents, children listen to everybody else except for their parents, right?
Right.
No matter what age they are. So they may not trust or take your advice when you're telling them this is how things need to go with their finances. So if there are some resistance to the parents, some resistance to parents telling them what they need to do, I would suggest having them meet with a financial professional really to kind of provide that objective advice. You know, if they hear mm-hmm. from a third party, it's better than your mom and your dad.
Mm-hmm.
So really sitting down with a financial professional to kind of cover a variety of financial issues, some of the basics like savings and credit and insurance if these are young adult children that you're talking about, versus you verbally giving them that information, because they may not take your information at face value. They have to hear it from a third party source in order
right.
to trust that. So if you are getting resistance that, you know, once you had the review and you had the check-in and things still aren't sinking in with your adult children on how finances need to be handled, you may want to recruit a mediator such as a financial advisor, professional, insurance professional, whoever you want to bring in order to kind of tell them the rules of the game on how they need to handle their financial issues.
Excellent. So yeah, I think what you're saying is, you know, kind of treat it like they went to a bank or a credit union to get the money. It's just that institution that they're getting the money from is parents, but still follow the same kind of rules that a financial institution would follow.
Exactly.
A financial institution would bring in a counselor. Right.
Mhm. Yep. You got to make sure you know everybody needs to be on the same page. It goes with, you know, back to what I talked about, having everybody on the same page and knowing what the objectives are. But like I said, sometimes, you know, kids are hard headed and they won't listen. So you need to bring in additional resources. Have to bring in the big gun, so to speak, to make them listen to what's going on. But that's a key. If you're not getting through to them or getting some resistance on this is how things need to operate, you know, having it from a professional, because mm-hmm. most kids will go, you know, what do you really know about finances? Are you a financial professional?
Right.
Then, you know,
well,
it's probably
case,
best
you could
to go
say
to
yes,
the horse's mouth.
Right. For your kids, you could say, yes, I am a financial professional.
Yeah. For my kids, you know, I always tell them, you know, I'm always preaching to them about finances, and they're probably looking at me at every time, like, do you read anything else besides financial magazines, Mom? And do you have to keep telling me this is what I need to do with my money? So sometimes they get a little sick of that piece. But, you know, it just comes back to really, really recruiting some professionals to assist you in your project of helping you get your children financially independent.
Mhm. All right. What else should we be thinking about? I believe that.
Well, we want to talk about multiple children,
okay.
because this gets to be really hard, especially for parents who have a lot of children. You don't want one child to feel that they're being neglected. So, if you are helping mm-hmm. one child, you want to try to help, if you can, equally, so you don't mm-hmm. have, you know, somebody saying you're supporting one versus the other, you're favoring this person. That really is painful, even for adult children. You know, I think we had talked about family dynamics in one conversation before. It gets mm-hmm. ugly sometimes. You gave somebody this and you didn't give me this. So if you do have, you know, resources, if you're going to help out children, do it equally. However, if there are resources that are limited and one is in more particular need than the other, and in really explaining that honestly with the other children to help them understand this is why, you know, your sister Margaret needs this help versus you because you have, you know, the resources in place for other things. But not doing it like we, what I explained before, kind of underhanded where you're slipping people money because that comes out and then that gets to be a situation where there's some friction in the family that you may be supporting one child versus the other and showing favoritism. But if you put it out front and put it on the table that your sister Margaret needs help because XYZ and I'm giving her this, at least it's out and everybody knows what's going on. They may or may not like it, but at least, you know, helping them understand this is the situation and why you need to, why they need that assistance, and really emphasizing if they are in the same situation, you would do the same for them. So making sure there's no perceived favoritism that is going on
right
in the family.
Okay, so from that point of view, I would think that it would probably sound better that you do lend the money and have, you know, one of these lending agreements that you're talking about, because then you could say to your child who's doing well and didn't require money from you, you could say, well, I didn't just give it to them. It, you know, it wasn't a gift that, that I gave them and you didn't get. You could say, you know, it's a financial contract. You know, we have an agreement and, you know, even if you were to say an interest is being paid, you know, that sort of thing, that might help with some of that jealousy factor where one child might say, you know, I'm not being treated as well as this other child is.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good way to handle that because, you know, like you said, if you, it's a loan and there's terms and there's agreement, you would do the same for that child in that situation that, you know, I would loan you the money, but this is what I'm expecting back on a payment plan. Mm-hmm. We draw it up. So, yeah, versus, you know, if you gift the child, then, you know, everybody wants a gift. So you have multiple children. Everybody's going to have their hand out in that situation. So in a situation where there are multiple children, it's probably best to devise some type of loan strategy so you don't look like you're showing any favoritism and you have kind of a contract with the child that you're lending the money to so you won't have any controversy in the family. So you don't want any family controversies in that aspect.
All right. So from your point of view as a financial advisor, then would you say that if a person was going to gift money to a child, then you really can't, would you advise you can't just gift money to one child because they have a need that you perceive, you would have to be equal-handed and give a gift to each of your children? How do you advise people on that?
That would probably be more of the the better situation if you're going to give money to a child that you want to do it on an equal basis. So if you have four children, you want to kind of, you know, gift what you can on an equal basis versus if this is a temporary situation or a situation where you're helping out your adult child, then it's probably best to do a loan situation. There's also gifting strategies if you need help, you want to gift it because there's also gifting that you can use and you can use tax deductions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's on a level of they need help and you have the resources to do a gifting strategy, you want to do that, but you also want to make sure you do it on an equal basis if people are getting gifts, because that's the worst thing is that, you know, kids will basically have handouts. You gave my sister a gift, but I didn't get anything. You know, as soon as you say gift, everybody's going to say, where's my gift? So you want to make sure, you know, back to expectations and terms, that this is a gift versus a loan. If I'm a loan it to you, these are the terms. If it's going to be a gift, then I will gift it, but I also have to make sure I equally give gifts out to all of the children that I have.
All right. Well, I'm sure it's a complex subject, but from the point of view of gifts, is there an easy way that you can tell us here this in this call here, what is the maximum amount that you're allowed to gift to a person in each year?
I think they've changed the rules or upped it a little bit. I believe it's $13,000 per year.
Okay.
It changes, you know, varies, whatever the IRS allows. But I believe it's $13,000 that you can give per year to a child or to, you know, a family member. But you have those stipulations where you can give gifts out to people.
Okay.
And then you get, you know, those gifting rules.
All right. So from that point of view, that's something that maybe they would we would need to keep in mind as we're trying to decide if something is a gift or a loan would be how much we can gift without having to have tax implications.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Now, if you have husband and wife, then that's a combination. So 13 and 13 would be 26 that you can gift to one person as a unit if you're basically joint.
Okay.
So there's more. The ceiling raises a little bit more.
All right.
But yeah, that's something too that you need to determine if it's the financial help is going to be outside of those limits. You want to make sure if it's going to be clarified as a loan versus a gift, because you don't want to get into any tax situations.
Mhm. All right. Anything else that you've got on your list of things that we need to be aware of as we're making these kind of decisions as to whether we're going to be the bank of mom and dad or not?
So, I mean, that's pretty much all of the steps to kind of financial independence that you want. But, you know, kind of the highlights, if we were to highlight things that are really important, is really setting boundaries with your children. It's the same as when they were kids. You have to do the same thing and really not have them assume certain things. So setting those boundaries and determining expectations on what needs to be done. It's really key when you're dealing with helping out adult children, because that in turn, you know, turns into what we had talked about initially. Is it going to be helping, or all of a sudden now I'm enabling them? So you need to set the rules of the game from the beginning. So I would probably say those are the highlights of when you're dealing with financing some of your adult children, their expenses and their lifestyle, getting all of this set in stone, but really discussing the expectations, setting those boundaries. So there's no gray areas or no assumptions. If you know, I thought you were going to do this, I thought you were going to do that. Really know what's going on up front before you put the help out there. Because you can get into a kind of a vicious cycle with helping adult children, and it keeps coming and it keeps coming, because I wouldn't say, you know, your kids take advantage of you, but just like, you know, they were kids sometimes, you know, I want this cereal, I want this. You know, sometimes,
right.
You know, you can be in a situation where you may be taken advantage of. So you don't want to continue supporting the adult child, especially if they're in a situation where they are working and they're working full time. That becomes a difficult situation, because they're basically not spending their money, they're spending your money, and you need your money in order to fund your lifestyle goals, your retirement, and such. So make sure you set expectations and set boundaries with your adult children.
All right. Well, I see we've got a question or two that's come in. And I've got the line open, so if anyone who's listening has a question, you can ask it after I get this one or two answers, and also type it into the box on the screen if you'd like to ask a question that way. The question that I've got here, Pam, is from Sarah in Colorado. She says, if I'm going to lend money rather than gift it, what are some questions I should be asking in my decision-making process?
I would probably determine if you are going to, if it's going to be a large sum of money, then that is where the gifting rules come into play. You don't want to get into tax trouble. So if it's going to be, if you're married, over $26,000, that's what's allowed as a gift. You may want to definitely check with the IRS rules, because they change them, you know, constantly. But I believe the last figure that I saw was $13,000 a year for each. So if it's going to be more than that, you may want to put the rules as anything above that would be a loan. So 26 would be as a gift. Anything above that you're going to be helping out would be considered a loan, because you don't want to get into a situation where you're in a tax situation by giving money away from your resources to someone else without, you know, skipping the IRS.
Right. I kind of like that if it was going to be a large amount to make part of it a gift and then part of it a loan. I think if you can afford to make the mm-hmm. $26,000 or $13,000 a person as a gift, if you can afford that and then more than that make it a loan, I think that mm-hmm. that's you're making it easier on them because they're not having to pay you back the full amount.
Correct.
By taking advantage of the gifting rules. So I think that mm-hmm. is an interesting thing to consider. Anybody else have a question? I've got one more here, but I don't want to keep people that are listening from asking a question. So does anyone who's listening have a question? All right. Well, while they're still thinking about it, I'm going to ask you one. This one is from Rhonda, and she's in the St. Louis area. She says, are there any mm-hmm. websites that you recommend people use when you do lend money to children?
Not offhand that I know about, but if you're going to devise a loan or if you're going to lend money to your adult children as a loan, I would probably just do a Google search on, you know, kind of the basics on a template of how to draft one so you know, so you're not just, you know, kind of freewheeling it and basically putting something mm-hmm. and writing yourself. There are actual templates and documents that are out there if you want to devise a loan agreement with your children. So I would probably just, you know, go on the website. I would go on the internet and do a Google search on loan documents and be able to get some of these templates that are out with that. I believe Forbes had an article related to this particular topic a while ago about helping adult children with that. They may also have some resources that are available to you as well.
All right. We still have a little bit more time here in our hour, so anybody who's listening, feel free to just speak up and ask a question. Pam will be happy to give a try to answer it, and she usually does have an answer. I haven't stumped you yet, as far as I know, Pam.
I know. We've been doing this for quite a while, so I appreciate
yes.
it. So thank you.
Right. Nobody else has a question. Well,
yes, I think people are just shy, and they're just kind of absorbing as sponges just the information.
Right.
Or it's overwhelming them so much that they're like, okay, now I have to go back and do a lot more thinking on this particular subject on what I need to do.
Well, I've got one other question coming in, and that is, if I cannot provide financial support, what do you think of offering other ways to help, such as a family car that I'm not using, or, you know, drawing on my professional connections to help someone, one of my children, find a job? What are your thoughts on that type of help?
Yeah, I mean, any way that you can help your children would be beneficial. So if it's, you know, I know a lot of times people, parents have connections to employment situations. So if they could put out the word for, or at least put their resume, have their child put the resume out, they have a connection at a certain employer, that's a good way to do it as well. So any help that you can give your children in non-financial situations, the better. If it's going to be the family car, you can do that. Just make sure, you know, it's not it's, you know, you're just giving it to them. It's not kind of a gift or a donation type situation, because then there's donation rules that are associated
okay.
with certain assets as well. But, you know, most people won't know that particular situation, so if you want to give the family car to them, that's fine as well. But any resources you can provide to your adult children, non-financial, probably the better.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your thoughts on if you decide – one of the things we talked about when I gave that list of how parents are helping, the one that really shocked me – probably I shouldn't have been shocked, but the one that shocked me was that 10% helping to pay down – children's credit card debt. Now, to me, that's a real slippery slope. So do you have any thoughts on
mm-hmm.
The advisability of doing that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, that goes back to enabling you know, lifestyles or subsidizing people's lifestyles. If you are paying down your kids' credit card debts, more than likely they've spent monies on things that will support their lifestyle. Either they've bought clothes or whatever. So helping them pay that down, it may not be financially – teaching them to be financially responsible as it comes to their credit card debt. So that's a like you said, that's a pretty alarming number that of people that are actually paying or parents that are paying down their credit card debt. It's one of those conversations you do have to have in order to make them more financially independent and financially healthy, is to explain, you know, this is what you have built up in credit card debt and devise a game plan on how to help them pay down debt versus paying it down for them. So, like you said, it's definitely a slippery slope. My advice would be to really not support or subsidize your adult children's lifestyle. A lot of times that's through the use of credit cards. You want to devise some type of strategy on helping them pay it off, maybe showing them ways that they can put money on their own debt to pay that down versus actually paying down their debt for them.
All right. That sounds good. I've got a question that's coming from me here, Pam, and that is you mentioned the concept that I really liked where you said to recruit a mediator such as a financial advisor to be involved in this transaction, this discussion with you and your children, especially in the case where you might be lending as opposed to gifting money. And I'm curious if you've been involved in transactions like this, because it would seem to me that when a parent brings in a professional like that situation, that it would really make the child aware of, you know, this is something my parents are serious about. This is not playing games. This is not something where I can get away with that I'm not actually ever going to pay them back, kind of a thing. So have you had personal experience with that?
I have had, not as it relates to, you know, taking care of adult children, but what I have had is that, you know, clients of mine have said, you know, now that my child has graduated from college, I want them to come see you right away situations, but so they can get on the right foot initially. So I always have a lot of clients bring in their adult children after graduation to really kind of go through some of the resources with them. Now, one particular situation that did come to my mind at the when you had mentioned that, I did have somebody's mother call me and said, my daughter needs help financially. I can't support her anymore. She doesn't know how to function financially. Can you sit down with her? And so I did sit down with both of them, or at least she called me. Her mother was elderly, and she couldn't get about, but she told her to come see me because she was kind of up to her wit's end with helping her out financially. And I think she was well into her, you know, 40s or 50s, and her mom was in her 80s. So she said she needs help right away. So it was an intervention on trying to get her up and running and understanding a lot of concepts financially and kind of reining her in and her spending as well. So, yes, I have kind of been recruited as mediators or intervention specialists or whatever you want to call it.
And so it is your experience that when a professional is called in by a parent for a child, that then the child says, wait, this is being something I got to take seriously then.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really kind of wakes them up and saying, okay, this is a serious situation. You know, if my parents went to this much difficulty to find somebody and then to drag me in and really make sure we're all working together, then, you know, maybe I need to get my act together. So it definitely motivates them a little bit more than, like, you know, when I mentioned before, kind of that trust issue. Oh, mom's just talking this, dad's just talking that. So if you actually bring in a professional, it makes things a little more serious for them.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask one more time if anyone has a question. Otherwise, I think we're pretty close to the top of the hour, and I'm going to close the call. So speak up if you're out there and you have a question for Pam. Okay, hearing no one, Pam, I'm going to say that it's been great talking to you as usual. Thank you so much for being our guest on this great topic. Certainly,
thank you.
This is an important topic because we all need to be good stewards of our of our money, and yet we want to be helping our parents. I mean, we've grown up, our kids have grown up, and we've been helping them as they grew up. So it's so hard to not want to continue to help when a child has a need, but yet you don't want to be taken advantage of in the process. So I really appreciate
Correct.
You giving us this information, and I'm going to wrap up the call here because I think you've given us a ton of good information. Unless there's anything else that you want to say as a final word before we end for the night.
No, I think we addressed everything. Like I said, the kind of the highlights again, really making sure if you are helping adult children and kind of help them wean off of the financial help of Bank of Mom and Dad, set those expectations, set boundaries, really discuss with your child the importance of financial independence, and then if all else fails, bring in a mediator to speed up the process to help them know the true meaning of what it needs to be financially healthy and financially independent.
Excellent. Well, thank you, and thank you everyone who's been listening.
Thank you.
Even if you're not asking questions. We've had a great call here with you, Pam, and if you – anyone
Thank
listening
you.
Has a question after the call, feel free to email them to Pam. You can do that at pamela@jacksonsams.com. That's jacksonsams.com. And if you'd like to know more about the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, you can find us at our website, www.nabbw.com, our forum at boomerwomenspeak.com, and we have a Facebook page at facebook.com/NABBW. So, thank you, Pam, and thank you, listeners, for
thank
joining
you.
Us tonight, and good night.
Good night.